Ultimately, there's two ways this execution can stop. One is the Board of Pardons and Paroles can recommend clemency. It will be up to Governor Abbott to make that determination. Or even without a recommendation from the board, he could grant a reprieve so that the evidence of Ms. Lucio's innocence can be considered in the courts. And also the Court of Criminal Appeals can issue a stay so that this doesn't go forward. But right now, we're 7 days away from Ms. Lucio's execution. And again, nothing is standing in the way until somebody acts.
Well, we will certainly continue to follow this case. Vanessa Potkin, Director of Special Litigation at the Innocence Project, one of Melissa Lucio's attorneys. And that does it for our show. We end with some wonderful news. Congratulations to Democracy Now! Producer Tammy Warnoff and her partner David Rowley on the birth of their son. Welcome to the world, Felix Shin Warnoff Rowley, our newest Democracy Now! News bunny. And that does it for the show. Democracy Now! Is immediate opening for a news writer-producer. Visit democracynow.org/jobs to find out more and apply. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warnoff, Camille Baker, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Rabbi Karen, Honey Masood, Mary Conlin, and Juan Carlos Davila. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Noguera, Hugh Grant, Dennis Moynihan. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM and KBOO.FM online.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available at our website. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 4:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO is in the middle of our annual spring membership drive. It's that time of year where KBOO is all abuzz, and we need you to come jive with our radio hive. Help us reach our $56,000 goal and keep the hive alive. Just go to kboo.fm/give or mail a check to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. And thanks!
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this spring membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News, Oregon COVID case numbers are on the rise. The Biden administration may challenge the ruling that dropped mask requirements from transit and air travel. And Oregon Governor Kate Brown signs a bill into law guaranteeing overtime to agricultural workers. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, April 20th, 2022. We'd like to remind you that you can become a member of KBOO at any time during this broadcast by going online to kboo.fm/give or by texting KBOO to 44321. I'm Althea Billings. Last week, Oregon saw 50% more reported coronavirus cases than the week before, the third week of case growth after 9 weeks of steady declines. The true number of cases is probably higher since people are not required to report positive at-home tests to any health authority. Oregon health officials said today that the true estimate could be 5 to 10 times higher than reported case counts. Dr. Tom Jean is the deputy state health officer. Here's how he characterized the COVID pandemic in Oregon today.
In Oregon, the emergency phases of the COVID-19 response have ended. However, the pandemic is not over, and several measures remain in place. These include vaccination requirements for those who work in healthcare settings, congregate care settings, and K-12 schools, and mask requirements in healthcare, long-term care, and other congregate care settings. Thanks to Oregonians' ongoing actions, including choosing to wear masks, getting vaccinated and boosted, and staying home when sick, our state has avoided the worst outcomes seen in many other states. Oregon continues to rank among the most successful states in the country in our response. Thanks to so many of our residents protecting each other, our vaccine providers who continue to serve all Oregonians, our healthcare workers, and the collective actions of our many local public health, community, and tribal partners. We continue to see relatively low numbers of hospitalized patients with COVID-19 illness, averaging fewer than 100 patients a day during April, a significant drop from the more than 1,100 hospitalized patients we saw during the Delta and Omicron surges. However, our daily case counts have seen a steady rise since their lows of 200 and 300 per day at the start of the month. The most recent 7-day average is 600 cases per day as of April 19th. We know from experience that hospitalizations tend to lag behind infections, so we expect those numbers to eventually rise too. It has been a little more than 4 weeks since the lifting of mask use in most settings, and some of the jump we see in case counts is likely tied to less mask use and more Oregonians gathering indoors and returning to pre-pandemic social activities. The proportion of cases that are reported to public health also has likely declined with more home tests available. We also know that we're confronting a particularly stubborn adversary, this time in the form of an Omicron subvariant known as BA2, which is now the dominant variant in Oregon, as it is in much of the country. A number of these factors are addressed in the state model forecast that is now released every other week by our colleagues at Oregon Health and Science University. The most recent model projects a slight increase in hospitalizations over the next 2 months. The good news is that it's expected to be far below the surge levels we saw late last summer and this past winter.
Upcoming case numbers could be affected by the recent dropping of mandatory masking on public transit and airlines. Health officials aren't sure yet how the federal changes to transit and air travel could change case numbers. Dr. Tom Jean.
I don't think we have a specific estimate as to how that recent change at the federal level might impact cases. What we know is that cases are already going up in Oregon. They're going up around the country right now. We're going to continue to see that. We're also going to continue to see an impact on our hospitalizations eventually here and deaths just as those cases go up. But the projections, I have to emphasize, so far look like any peak we're going to see in the near future here is going to be quite a bit lower than our large peaks from last year and this past winter.
Dr. Jean also expressed that there was not a level of COVID transmission that the health authority had decided would reinstate mask mandates.
We don't have any thresholds right now that at which we would consider that. We are looking at our numbers. We are constantly evaluating, and right now there are no plans to do that. What I can focus on is where we are today is much different from where we were a year or two ago. We've got over 80% of our population with immunity. Some level of immunity to COVID-19. We've got effective therapeutics and treatments for COVID, and any impact on hospitalizations and Oregon in general is going to be much less this time around. So we hope that kind of intervention would not be required.
Dr. Paul Cieslak is the medical director for communicable diseases and immunizations for the Oregon Health Authority. He said at-risk populations like elderly folks and immunocompromised people should have access to therapeutic treatments that can help them fight COVID if they catch their case early.
What I can tell you is that our supply of Paxlovid, which has an 89% protection, offers 89% protection against hospitalization in patients who take it soon after their COVID-19 symptoms begin, is available at test-to-treat centers around Oregon. And you can find one of these test-to-treat centers on the federal locator. The URL is https://aspr.hhs.gov/test-to-treat and find a location near you. This is the sort of thing where you need to get a diagnosis, and then the medications do require a prescription. And so these are facilities where the ability to dispense is tied to the ability to get a prescription. So it should be sort of a one-stop shopping for people who think they might have COVID-19 and are at risk for severe disease.
According to an Oregon Health and Science University forecast, hospitalizations for COVID could more than double by June. The lawsuit that ended up striking down the mask mandate for public transit and air travel was surprising to many. The Biden administration says they will challenge the judge's ruling on a few conditions. One of those was if the CDC recommended it, and the CDC has now asked the Justice Department to challenge the ruling. KBOO's Josh Salem has more.
The Biden administration announced yesterday that it intends to appeal a Florida judge's ruling striking down the federal mask mandate on airplanes, trains, buses, and other public transportation. But it will do so only if the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention decides extending the mask measure is necessary. The Justice Department released a statement saying it and the CDC, quote, disagree with the district court's decision and will appeal, subject to CDC's conclusion that the order remains necessary for public health, end quote. The mask mandate also applied to transportation hubs like airports and train stations, and even ride-sharing services like Uber. It was set to expire on May 3rd, before the judge's ruling striking it down. If the CDC decides there is a public health basis for reinstating the mandate, the Justice Department plans to file an appeal soon after. The CDC imposed a mandate in early 2021 on presidential direction. The agency had already extended it several times, most recently on April 13th. It said it wanted to keep the requirement in place several more weeks while it assessed the potential severity of the Omicron subvariant known as BA2, the dominant strain in the United States. The federal district court judge in Florida, who struck down the mandate, Catherine Kimball Mizell, did so based on narrowly interpreting the CDC's legal authority under the Public Health Service Act of 1944. However, a ruling by a district court judge is not itself a binding precedent. Many are concerned that the CDC could permanently lose power if the mandate appeal is lost in a higher court decision, and that the agency would not be able to effectively deal with future public health crises. The majority of the justices on the court that oversees Mizell, the Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit in Atlanta, are also Trump appointees. Others believe leaving the ruling in place, uncontested, already undermines the CDC's authority. In fact, support for mask mandates itself is waning. The fraction of Americans wanting face mask and social distancing guidelines dropped from half of the public to just a third from February to March. The CDC feels that its most recent extension of the mask mandate was reasonable to give it time to assess the evidence and make a data-driven decision about whether to continue it. According to its statement, the Justice Department, quote, continues to believe that the order requiring masking in the transportation corridor is a valid exercise of the authority Congress has given CDC to protect the public health. That is an important authority the department will continue to work to preserve, end quote. For KBOO News, I'm Josh Salem.
The requirement for people on public transit to wear masks was unexpectedly dropped this week, but the Navajo Nation will keep its mask mandate. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The tribe with the largest reservation in the United States is keeping its mask mandate in place as the federal mandate for masks to be worn on public transit suddenly ended this week. The top leader of the Navajo Nation is reminding reservation residents and visitors the tribe's mask mandate has never been lifted. It's been in place for 2 years on the vast reservation located in the Four Corners region. During a virtual town hall Tuesday, tribal leaders and healthcare officials urged residents to keep taking precautions. Navajo Nation President Jonathan Nez.
You know, we are not out of the pandemic just yet. You know that in Philadelphia, the East Coast, you're starting to see some numbers jump up. They're also putting the mask mandate back in place. We have a mask mandate that we've never stopped. And so we're just keeping everybody safe. I know people say, well, masks don't work or shots don't work, but you know what? Look at the data. And I show this to you every Tuesday at 10 a.m. We need to continue to keep our mask on. And I hope and pray we don't see an increase in cases because of the Easter weekend.
The tribe's continuing to see low COVID-19 numbers. As of Tuesday, Navajo health departments reported 3 new cases and no deaths. Other tribes across the country have dropped their mask mandates, including the Blackfeet Nation in Montana and the St. Regis Mohawk Tribe in New York. This week, a judge struck down the federal mask mandate for public transportation. Meanwhile, a senior advisor for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says the CDC has created guidance looking at COVID community levels to help support tribes. Dr. Shay Welch says COVID-19 data and trends are tracked in off-reservation communities.
We know that tribal community members go from reservation into surrounding border towns for supplies and so forth. And it very well may be that there is a low or a medium or a high rate of COVID transmission in that local county. So we are encouraging tribes to take a look at what we call CCL, COVID community levels.
Welch says looking at data and trends in nearby communities may help tribes determine what COVID-19 precautions to take.
Masking and isolations and social distancing. And here we are, the fabulous time of ceremonies and powwows coming back together after so many years, right? I mean, it just feels like so very long. And when we're celebrating, we want to come together. We want to practice ceremony. We want to do these things. But again, whether it's the spiritual leaders, the tribal leaders, the community leaders, chapter house, they are the ones who need to make the decision on how to keep the participants safe.
The tribal community guidance can be found online at cdc.gov. A Native-led organization in Rapid City, South Dakota, is encouraging community members to support businesses that stand in solidarity with the Indigenous people. Indian Collective and members of the Native community are hosting a rally Wednesday seeking to boycott businesses they say have racist policies. The action comes after a hotel owner called for a ban on Native American guests in March. Indian Collective has filed a class action lawsuit against the business, claiming staff members were refused rooms on two occasions. The group says the family is still profiting from other businesses in the Rapid City area. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Governor Kate Brown signed a bill into law yesterday that phases out the state's agricultural overtime pay exemption. The law gradually decreases the amount of work after which farm workers will be owed time and a half wages. Next year, that'll be after 55 hours of work. In 2025 and in 2026, it'll be after 48 hours of work, and then after 40 hours per week beginning in 2027. In most other industries, workers already get overtime pay after 40 hours of work in a week. Most farmers will be eligible for one of three tiers of tax credits, depending on how many people they employ. Those tax credits will decline between 2023 and 2028 when they end. Governor Kate Brown wrote of the law, quote, "This policy will make a significant difference in the lives of farm workers and their families." You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report on People's Action, a progressive grassroots organization gearing up for the 2022 midterm elections. At 6, it's Rural Roots Rising, then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather, we'll see some scattered showers and a low of 48 degrees. Tomorrow, expect scattered thunderstorms and a daytime high of 56. Today in history, in 2021, a Minnesota court found former police officer Derek Chauvin guilty on all charges in the murder of George Floyd. The quote of the day is from legendary American singer Luther Vandross, who was born this day in 1951. He wrote in the song Make Me a Believer, quote, "Superman can fly high, way up in the sky, because we believe he can. So what we choose to believe can always work out fine. It's all in the mind." Putin sends more troops to Ukraine, and a judge rules that Georgia voters can proceed with their case against Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene. With more on these stories, it's Nadia Ramlagan with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The Russians have already stepped up their missile and rocket attacks, and it's having, you know, quite destructive effect. And I think this is going to get much more intense.
Former CIA Russia Analysis Chief George Beebe on the developments in Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The Pentagon says it estimates that Moscow has added thousands of troops to the country in recent days. Russia declared on Tuesday that it's now on the offensive for control over Ukraine's industrial heartland. President Joe Biden responded to a district court ruling striking down a CDC mask mandate for public transportation. His comments came as he briefly spoke with reporters during a tour of the New Hampshire Port Authority.
Mr. President, should people continue to wear masks on planes?
That's up to them.
Moderna announced Tuesday that a new version of the company's COVID-19 vaccine appears to provide stronger, longer-lasting protection against coronavirus variants. Preliminary results show the so-called bivalent vaccine appears to produce high levels of antibodies. Vice President Kamala Harris says the U.S. will no longer conduct anti-satellite missile tests, the practice of using ground-based missiles to destroy satellites in orbit around Earth. Speaking at Vandenberg Space Force Base, Harris called on other countries to make the same commitment.
These weapons are intended to deny the United States our ability to use our space capabilities by destroying our satellites.
A National Labor Relations Board judge has ruled that Amazon must reinstate a former warehouse worker and owed him back pay for discriminatory discharge. Gerald Bryson was fired for protesting safety conditions at the beginning of the pandemic. What could unionization efforts by Amazon and Starbucks employees mean for the future of labor movement in the U.S.? Century Foundation senior fellow Stephen Greenhouse noted the trend Tuesday on C-SPAN.
The floodgates opened up, the dam broke. So now we've seen workers at over 200 Starbucks petitioning to hold union elections.
A judge has ruled a group of Georgia voters can proceed with their case against Georgia Republican Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene that seeks to disqualify her from congressional office over her alleged involvement in the U.S. Capitol riot. The Biden administration on Tuesday said it will now require federal agencies to conduct an analysis of the greenhouse gases that could be emitted over the lifetime of proposed infrastructure projects, as well as how climate change might affect new highways, bridges, and other infrastructure. I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
A British court has formally approved the extradition of WikiLeaks co-founder Julian Assange to the U.S. on espionage charges. The final decision rests with the British Secretary Priti Patel and is expected no later than May 18th. Assange has been in London's notorious Belmarsh prison for 3 years, just after his nearly 7 years of asylum in the Ecuadorian embassy ended. WikiLeaks came to international attention in 2010 when it published a series of leaks from U.S. Army intelligence analyst Chelsea Manning, including an infamous video of U.S. soldiers gunning down civilians in Baghdad. Assange's case has been regarded as an assault on journalism and free speech. The changes in voting introduced during the pandemic, like universal vote by mail and consolidation of polling places, had differing effects on the gap between overrepresented groups of voters and those who are underrepresented. That's all according to a new study. Suzanne Potter has the story in California.
The pandemic changed the way we vote in California, and some of the reforms made voting patterns more equitable, while others did not, according to a new study from the Public Policy Institute of California. The decision to send mail-in ballots to all registered voters narrowed the gap between groups that often turn out in force, such as non-Hispanic white voters and older people, and those who are underrepresented, often people of color and younger folks. Study co-author Eric McGee says concerns about voter suppression are overblown.
When you mail everybody a ballot, you get basically the same number of people turning out to vote. You're not suppressing one side's vote versus the other. There's no evidence that it alters election outcomes, and there really wasn't even a gap in opinions about mail balloting until the 2020 election.
Deep Blue Oregon and Deep Blue Utah have been mailing ballots to all registered voters for years with very few irregularities and no partisan effect. However, in the context of a primary, the study found that mailing every voter a ballot actually worsened the turnout gap. McGee says that while it elevated everybody's turnout, it raised turnout for white voters and seniors even more.
So in a primary election context, there can't be just sort of a rising tide lifts all ships kind of thing. It has to be more of a targeted, deliberate effort to bring out the vote of underrepresented communities.
In recent years, many counties have embraced the Voters' Rights Act, which allowed them to open regional vote centers to allow for more early voting while closing down some local polling places. McGee says this actually widened the turnout gap because it caused significant voter confusion, especially among neighborhoods of color and young voters.
So what we recommended was to consider maybe doing less consolidation or to do better outreach to communicate the change to voters so that they're more aware of it.
Support for this reporting was provided by the Carnegie Corporation of New York. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael wishes he could afford an elected official.
That a single unelected judge can cancel the federal mandate for masks on mass transportation shows how messed up our government is. Assuming that Wyoming and California having the same number of senators, or that almost nothing can pass in the Senate with just a simple majority, hasn't already made that clear. As the coming primaries and fall elections will spotlight the power of money, Carrick Flynn's campaign for the 6th District is largely funded by a cryptocurrency super PAC, while the million Betsy Johnson got for her gubernatorial run is the rare exception, as it came from Oregon, Phil Knight. Money knows no boundaries, no taxation or representation. Profit from war, profit from pollution, profit from decreasing food supplies. And sometimes it's not about profit, but self-protection through distraction, like banning abortions and banning books, or endorsing the opponent of candidates who challenge the powerful's grip, whether at the national or city level. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You are listening to a spring membership Hive Drive edition of the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, April 20th, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem, Dan Raphael, and David Rosenberg. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Nadia Ramlagan, and Suzanne Potter. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. Thank you. It's our spring membership Hive Drive at the moment, so now is a great time to support us. If you'd like to become a member and support your local community radio station, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
This is KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. Many grassroots groups and organizations are gearing up for the 2022 midterms. People's Action, a progressive advocacy organization made up of 40 different groups in 30 states, is no exception. Brooke Adams is the director of Movement Politics for People's Action. She spoke with KPFA weekend news anchor and KBOO contributor David Rosenberg. He asked her whether her group is focusing mostly on the midterms or whether there's a broader agenda.
We are looking forward to the midterms as an opportunity to make some big shifts in sort of what's possible in the progressive movement. But as an organization as a whole, People's Action is working with state-based groups to build long-term power with working class members, so that ultimately, a decade plus from now, we have the ability to govern in relationship with our members.
So what particular strategies have you devised to come out on the winning side, so to speak, or at least to promote the cause?
Yeah, so I would say movement politics in and of itself is a strategy at People's Action. And maybe to boil it down, corporations and the rich in this country have taken over our entire government and economy. And as a result, our communities all across the country are suffering. So our goal with the Movement Politics Program is to build a government and economy where everyone can thrive. And we're focusing on electing working class progressives to local, state, and federal office. So in 2022, our goal is to protect the Democratic majority in Congress. But it's also about expanding where progressive candidates can contest by electing champions in Republican-held swing districts.
So when you say progressive, do you mean only Democrats or can they be people in other parties?
Yeah, so when we say progressive, it's really about our agenda and whether or not the candidate is committed to building a democratically controlled economy and sort of like a political system that is truly democratic, where we can win on things like Medicare for All, Green New Deal, et cetera. Oftentimes we are supporting Democrats, but we actually don't limit ourselves to only supporting Democrats in name.
Are there particular issues that you're focusing on? I know you just mentioned, for example, Medicare for All, but what are some of those main issues that you're concerned about right now?
Yeah, so we have many issue campaigns running, and maybe I'll focus on the issues that are specifically relevant for 2022 and our work in the midterms. The number one thing I would say, though, as sort of a thread that ties together our issue work, is that People's Action as an organization is really committed to tackling corporate greed in this country. So I think when you look at a lot of the major roadblocks we've faced on the rest of our progressive agenda, corporate spending and corporations and the wealthy in this country spreading lies about deficit spending or the lie of big government has been hugely sort of impactful for blocking us from winning things that are popular with the American electorate. So when you consider during the pandemic that US billionaires collectively grew their fortunes by $1.8 trillion, and that with the Trump tax